3. Emptiness, Relativity, and Quantum Physics. One of the most inspiring things about science is the change our understanding of the world undergoes in the light of new findings. The discipline of physics is still struggling with the implications of the paradigm shift it underwent as a result of the rise of relativity and quantum mechanics at the turn of the 20th century. Scientists, as well as philosophers, have to live constantly with conflicting models of reality. The Newtonian model, assuming a mechanical and predictable universe, and relativity and quantum mechanics, assuming a more chaotic cosmos. The implications of the second model for our understanding of the world are still not entirely clear. My own worldview is grounded in the philosophy and teachings of Buddhism, which arose within the intellectual milieu of ancient India. I was exposed to ancient Indian philosophy at an early age. My teachers at that time were the then regent of Tibet, Tandrak Rinpoche, and Ling Rinpoche. Tandrak Rinpoche was an old man, highly respected and quite stern. Ling Rinpoche was much younger. He was always gentle, soft-spoken, deeply learned, but not a man of many words, at least when I was a child. I remember being terrified in the presence of both. I had several philosophical assistants to help me debate what I was taught. These included Trizheng Rinpoche and the renowned Mongolian scholar-monk Nundrup Sokhnyi. When Tandrak Rinpoche passed away, Ling Rinpoche became my senior tutor, and Trizheng Rinpoche was promoted to junior tutor. These two remained my tutors until the end of my formal education, and I continually received numerous lineages of the Tibetan Buddhist heritage from both of them. They were close friends, but very different characters. Ling Rinpoche was a stocky man with a shining, bald head, and his whole body would shake when he laughed. He had a huge presence, but small eyes. Trizheng Rinpoche was a tall, thin man of great grace and elegance with a rather pointed nose for a Tibetan. He was gentle and had a deep voice, which was particularly melodious when he chanted. Ling Rinpoche was an acute philosopher with a sharp, logical mind and a good debater with a phenomenal memory. Trizheng Rinpoche was one of the greatest poets of his generation with an eclectic command of art and literature. In terms of my own temperament and natural talents, I think I'm closer to Ling Rinpoche than to any of my other tutors. It's perhaps fair to say that Ling Rinpoche has been the greatest influence on my life. When I started learning about the various tenets of the ancient Indian schools, I had no way of relating these to any aspect of my personal experience. For example, the Samkhya theory of causation says that any effect is a manifestation of what was already there within the cause. The Vaisheshika theory of universals proposes that the plurality of any one class of objects has a permanent ideal generality that is independent of all the particulars. There were Indian theistic arguments proving the existence of the creator, and Buddhist counterarguments demonstrating the opposite. In addition, I had to learn many of the intricate differences in the tenets of the various schools within Buddhism. They were too esoteric to be of any immediate relevance to a boy in his early teens whose enthusiasm lay more in dismantling and reassembling watches or motor cars, and poring over Second World War photographs and books and copies of Life magazine. In fact, when Babu Tashi took apart and cleaned the generator, I stood by to help him. I so enjoyed the process that I often forgot my studies and even my meals. When my philosophical assistants came to help me review, my mind would wander back to the generator and its many parts. But things changed when I turned 16. Events were moving fast. As the Chinese army reached the border of Tibet in the summer of 1950, the regent, Tandrak Rinpoche, suggested that the time had come for me to assume full temporal leadership of the country. Perhaps it was this loss of youth forced upon me by the grave reality of looming crisis that brought home to me the true value of education. Whatever the cause may be, from the age of 16, my engagement with the study of Buddhist philosophy, psychology, and spirituality was qualitatively different. Not only was I wholehearted in my pursuit of these studies, but I also came to relate many aspects of what I studied to my own understanding of life and events in the outside world. As I began to delve deeply into study, reflection, and meditative contemplation of Buddhist thought and practice, Tibet's dealings with the Chinese forces in the country, in the attempt to arrive at some kind of mutually satisfactory political arrangement, became more and more complicated. Finally, soon after I completed my formal education and sat in the holy city of Lhasa in the presence of several thousand monks for my Geshe examination, an event which marked the climax of my formal academic studies and which remains to this day a source of great satisfaction for me, the crisis in central Tibet forced me to escape from my homeland to India, to embark upon the life of a stateless refugee. This is still my legal status, but by losing citizenship in my own country, I found it in a larger sense. I can genuinely say that I'm a citizen of the world.